handle the truth. Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Prick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 11 a.m. on Monday, December 14th in the year of our Lord, 2020. I'm doing a nice mid-morning, late-morning podcast. I've had my early breakfast because I can't sleep. That's become a real theme of 2020. I'm sure there's other things at work, but, you know, having weekly or monthly reminders of how far comedy has fallen, and it keeps you up. It keeps you up at night if you're a dedicated psycho comedian like me. And so I had my breakfast, my healthy breakfast, eggs and blueberries, black coffee. Then I just finished my tea and walnuts and cashews snack. You know, you got to get those healthy fats and those flavonoids or whatever the fuck is in tea that, you know, every healthy article tells you need to add these things. And, you know, every day is a struggle. It's just how many healthy things can I eat before I eventually slip up and start, you know, going down on a tube of cookie dough, which is one of my favorite visual references from Keep My Enemies Closer. If you're a fan and don't have that album, I don't actually consider you a fan. That's right. I'm getting particularly strident now. As I see comedy, you know, just as I see comedy on a ventilator, in society, it makes me more and more militant. While not giving up my left of center bona fides, it is making me more and more militant. Every day I seem to get some comment from some stupid person, some dumb ally, italicized dumb ally for a sarcastic effect. But, another last week, the New York Times, which I subscribe to, and I subscribe to the Newark Star Ledger, support that local paper, support that big journalism, you know, because it costs money to do what they do. And if you check my Twitter feed this week from Sunday, I shared an article by the New York Times, which is really quite incredible, amazing, and tragic about this mom in Mexico who basically went on like a one-woman revenge tour of the cartel who kidnapped and killed her daughter. Incredible narrative in the article. So, you know, that's just if you want to still feel sad but on a break from Trump and COVID, I recommend that article. It's on my Twitter feed. You just have to scroll a little bit. But in the Sunday Times, which I had already known because I'd seen it online, I got my weekly dose. Well, this one was actually particularly harsh. This when I tell you that I was in the supermarket, kind of looking like Michael Douglas from Falling Down, I don't think that's an exaggeration. And I at this point, I understand I am being irrational, not because I'm wrong, but because I finally got to be a captain of my own ship in comedy this year. And all I've been doing is running into Sarah Cooper icebergs the entire year. just can't stop. And but this one was different because this wasn't, I'm expecting all the praise for her, and that's fine. You know, if you think 11 minutes of lip sync videos in a year doth make a comedy genius, then so be it. Then I am, you know, just like in politics, we have 74 million Trump voters that we can all, people of sound mind and spirit, can disavow. I, as a veteran, skilled, productive comedian, can disavow all the people who think that's genius. You're entitled to your opinion. It's just not an opinion I respect. That's all. I'm not even saying I don't respect you as a person, but when a comedian can't even be allowed, you know, everybody talks about the death of expertise when it comes to science, right? Like, so if MAGA people go, mask is stupid, mask is for liberal gender, Bill Gates trying to kidnap your kids, put trackers in them, and then they gonna make us slaves to the internets. If that's you, we all can sort of write you off. But for some reason, when it comes to comedy, because there is a subjective nature to it, we disavow the expertise of people who are very deep and experienced in the game. Now, once again, I've said repeatedly, you can like whatever you like. I don't have to respect your opinion. I respect your right to have it, and I'm not going to get in your face and be like, you dumb motherfucker. But I just know that if you say, I think you're equally a genius as Sarah Cooper, that's likely to get, you know, I've blocked dozens of people for expressing what they thought was a compliment. I really have no, I'm fucking, you know, I'm John Wick with this shit. I don't have tolerance for like things in my timeline that I don't respect. And I don't respect lip sync as an art form. I respect that it can make people laugh, but farts make me laugh sometimes. I don't think a fart should get a Netflix special. But you know, whatever, this is the world. So basically this has been like, instead of enjoying this year, as I should have been, and I definitely sound ungrateful, this year has been an emotional and mental struggle for me, because I was actually fine. You know, the righteous girlfriend had 4 months off paid from work. Like, it was, I was so jealous, and I was like overworked because, you know, as I've expressed, my comedy career has given me nothing but anxiety. Like, it was easy when you just figured, oh, my career's sort of over, so I can just turn it into a hobby. I know I'm good. It's something I want to keep doing in limited bursts, but I can't prioritize it over my life and the job that pays me regularly. And then this happened, and it obviously elevated my expectations and hopes for my stand-up career. But I had to keep the day job because I had learned hard lessons from comedy. So instead, this whole year, I was just overworked, and then very stressed existentially about comedy, because I genuinely, this is the thing that nobody understands. Like, they think I'm hating. Just like Trump, I know that Trump being elected president is far more consequential. But in my life, seeing comedy shift under my feet, and not in like a, oh, wow, you really need to get into the internet now. I wish everything was submit a tape to a club, the best comedians get the work, blah, blah, blah. That's what I wish the world still was. It's not. So I've adapted. I'm a podcaster. I'm a YouTuber. I'm pretty good on Twitter. I joined TikTok reluctantly. I'm having like very, very little success there, and I don't really care, but I just figure you gotta make adjustments. You gotta go with the flow for where things are going. But the same way we can look at 74 million people voting for Trump and be like, I didn't know I lived in this country. When I see so many people consider, so many people who, by the way, probably never go to comedy clubs and have never written a fucking thing in their life, hailing this lip sync as genius, you just go, oh, wow. Like, I didn't know so many comedy fans were like stupid when it came to comedy. That's what I really like. And everybody has this philosophical sort of argument back, like, what she's doing is more than just lip syncing. She's doing X, Y, and Z. And I go, okay, so let's say you're right. Okay. So she managed to create something. Okay. Now let's see what she does next. But okay, if I accept that, she's current, I would suggest that's a one-hit wonder. But okay, but let's say it is a one-hit. I have to acknowledge the hit. That's if you're right. But what if you're wrong? What if you're just a pretentious douche trying to sort of find this ground of being woke and of the zeitgeist and supporting black women and doing all these things that, by the way, I bring up because these are things that people have actually written to me on Twitter. I'm not suggesting nefarious or woke attributes to her fan base. I'm stating that they are there in plain daylight when multiple people will tell me, like, you have to admit supporting a black woman is, taking down Trump has extra value. And I go, really? Like, I've never watched a comedy show and considered that it was extra funny because it was, like, somehow, you know, more made me feel better because of who was doing it. I've liked comedians who I hate personally. That's how dedicated I am to comedy as objectively. There are comedians who, if you're a longtime listener, I remember naming some names, but I had personal beefs that these people didn't even know I knew, that I had been disrespected behind my back, and I could still acknowledge, well, the motherfucker's funny. So what? Like, I don't have to like the dude, but I'm also not going to let my personal feelings infect whether or not I think the person's comedy is good. So, you know, the way a defense lawyer defends a client, that's how I sort of feel about good comedy. Like, if you're a piece of shit, I'm not going to all of a sudden decide that your comedy is no longer good or that you're not capable of good comedy. But I don't know. I'm rambling. But the point was, if you're wrong, if everybody who has these high-minded ex post facto justifications, because every interview I saw and every review I read is polished by a publicist. Like, there is a narrative that has not spontaneously emerged. Like, you see the same phrases in review after review. And that's when you know a well written publicist statement is being sort of used as the backbone of some of this content. But the point is, if you're wrong, if it is just lip syncing, which is very common on TikTok, if it's wrong, then you're a fucking idiot. If it is just mediocre TikTok content, then you're an idiot. But you don't want to be a fan. It's not good enough to be just a fan of some fun, light stuff. You need to, a lot of people seem to need to justify their love of content with, like, high-mindedness and sort of, well, it's actually much deeper than lip sync because, or it's not. And you're just wasting words and breath trying to make yourself seem more important for what you like. Once again, it's about making yourself feel better for what you like. For instance, Jeff Daniels farts in Dumb and Dumber. It's one of the funniest scenes. He has fucking a laxative and he's shitting on a toilet. What he does physically in that scene is one of the funniest 10 things I've ever seen in a movie. But it's poopy humor, right? Now, if I go, well, no, it's actually a lot more than toilet humor. What it is it's a robust exercise in metaphysical comedy where Jeff Daniels is showing that he, as a former dramatic actor, is actually capable of taking on Jim Carrey mano a mano. And herein lies the struggle between dramatic acting and comedy acting, and why doesn't comedy acting get the attention it deserves? And therefore, when Jeff Daniels is violently thrusting his ass into the toilet because of all the laxative that Jim Carrey's character Lloyd Christmas gave him, well, then what we're really witnessing is a cinematic and art struggle for the ages. And that's why I think Jeff Daniels, as funny as the toilet humor is going to such a deeper level of humor that some may not understand, while Jim Carrey is simply delivering standard comedy in the film. Do you hear how fucking dumb that just sounded? There you go. That's my whole point. I hate it when pretentious people who can't just like comedy, they need it to be about, somehow needs to be about them. Another track from, I think it was Keep My Enemies Closer. I think it was in my, arguably my signature track of my entire career, Why White Women Disappear, the closer on that album, where I talk about people and I talk about white women saying, like, going overboard when they thank people at restaurants. Or say, oh my God, thank you so much. Thank you for this. Thank you. Thank you. And I go, are you really thanking the person or are you making a big gesture of you thanking someone. Like, in other words, your gratitude is really the impressive thing here, not the deed done for you, if you feel what I'm saying. To keep my enemies closer, I'm dead serious. If you are a fan of mine and you don't own that album, I don't really think I consider you a fan. I consider you Twitter plus. You're just a Twitter plus fan, which is fine. I don't mean, this is not the portion of the show where I shit on people. I appreciate that too. But if you are a J.L. Covan fan and you don't have Keep My Enemies Closer, that's like saying I'm a huge Guns N' Roses fan. But I haven't gotten Appetite for Destruction yet. Is that a good album? So, and Thoughts and Prayers is my Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 because it's a double album. And my name is Dave Chappelle. And if you haven't watched that sketch, you need to watch it. So anyway, this brings me this long rant, this long history of JL 2020 rant, where I feel like, I think the John the Baptist gospel was this week in church, which I'm still going to, although I think I'm going to sit Christmas out. I think my Christmas is going to consist of watching Soul at 8 in the morning with breakfast on Disney Plus, watching Mass on YouTube on my TV to stay away from a super spreader event, but I will be donating a hefty check to my church. I want to basically my time in Bloomfield, New Jersey, whether it's 2 years or 20 years, at some point I want like a pew with my name on it, even though they don't have that at the church. I maybe watch, but so basically I'm going to watch Disney Plus, Church, and Wonder Woman 1984. That's going to be me from the couch on Christmas Day, because I don't want to go with all these TikTok Christians who show up for the big Easter and Christmas and get a super spreader event. So I've been going to Mass though. And, but that will probably stop on Christmas Day. What are you running out here for, Cookie? Nothing's happening out here. Okay. Cookie's being a turd. That was a brain fart. I don't know what I was talking about, but the point was, this week then, or last week, this whole preamble. I do remember. I brought up church for a reason, not just to show off my piety. But the gospel was about, John the Baptist, a lone voice crying out in the wilderness. And that's what sometimes, maybe I am the John the Baptist of comedy. I'm just going to be beheaded by Twitter one day, but I will go, a comedian greater than me is still to come. I am not fit to plug in his microphone or her microphone or their microphone if you are non-binary, right? I think I just got that correct. Anyway, as I like to say, my pronouns are he, they, just because I want to encourage myself to lose weight. And if I'm referred to as a they, it makes me feel fat. that was hurtful, J.L. Shut up, them. Anyway, A.O. Scott. Let's get to A.O. Scott, the film critic for the New York Times, whose reviews generally seem like a guy who, before having sex with his significant other, has to put on Citizen Kane and have a DVD copy of a Terrence Malick film shoved up his ass for him to come. They wrote like their best performances or actors of the year, and Sarah Cooper made the list. In a typical year, you just get it's Daniel Day-Lewis, Joaquin Phoenix, Viola Davis, Sarah Cooper, TikTok. You know, just the only greats get in that list. But then he did a separate article about people who rose to fame and contributed on Twitter and TikTok. So he mentioned Coop, and then he mentioned this woman Blair Erskine, who's become very, very popular. Sticking true to my principles, she's making original content and using her own voice. So I can't disrespect that. And there were a couple of other TikTokers named. And, I was feeling slighted, not surprised. I was just like, God. Because what happened was a fan, being supportive, added me on Twitter to speak up for me. But sometimes I feel like those are fans, but I can't get mad at them because they are trying to spread the gospel of JL and they are trying to speak up for me, and that's very appreciated. But what it also does is bring attention to things that I wouldn't have otherwise seen, which then enrages me. And I was in my supermarket doing some shopping when I was looking through this art. No, I'm sorry, I was on the in the post office. Mailing some stuff. Oh, by the way, big merch news. I'm ordering. I'm taking a little risk on myself. I spent several thousand dollars to do this, but I have ordered 500 USB cards. Now, they're really cool. They look like business cards with like my picture and website and then pictures of my albums on the other side of the card. And the USB is loaded with all six of my albums. Now, I'm going to sell those at shows in 2021, and I hope if I can get enough shows to sell those out, because that would be a nice little chunk of change. But I think I may make those available for order as well. So it's, you know, you're saving money. If you buy the all my albums individually, no Trump albums, but if you buy my stand-up albums individually on Twitter, it'll come to like $69 and probably like 95 cents because one of them's a double album. Well, these will be going for 40, probably shipping and handling also at shows. I may sell them for 50 straight up to online. But anyway, I'm mailing a couple of my first two CDs to the manufacturer to make these cards. They needed the raw data off the CDs. So I'm on the line at the post office, and I almost went postal. I was like in a – I know this isn't normal. I know this isn't healthy, but I went blank, I think, for a couple of minutes because I just saw this article, and it wasn't that these people were being – I've come – the slights I'm used to. I don't have a publicist. I don't have management, so that's fine. Whatever. Like, I've still gotten some good press coverage, and I still have some good coverage coming out. But that's – I don't have power brokers making moves for me. But then in the article, there was a paragraph. It was about Coop. But there was a paragraph about this other guy who did like three videos this year that some people, I kept questioning. I was like, I think I talked about this guy a week or two ago. I was like, I was questioning, like, is my hearing going? Like, am I deaf? Like, I don't hear it with this guy. Like, and this is somebody who, you know, he's been an actor. So I think he has management representation, but he did a couple of videos, and A.O. Scott specifically called him out and said, the only person, this was also like felt personal, the same way Cooper's publicists early in the year kept the line that kept showing up in article after article was what she does is more than mere mimicry. Now, if one critic had written that, I would have been like, oh, fuck you. But it appeared in like three different major publications. And I was like, oh, right. In other words, we need to get out there. We need to change the narrative to where non-impersonations are the best type of impersonations. So the publicist was pumping out. I guarantee you, if you found a press release from her publicist, you would find the phrase, what Sarah does is more than mere mimicry. And then, you know, TV critics and whatnot were like happy to parrot that. So then when I saw what A.O. Scott wrote, he wrote, the only person to truly capture Trump's voice and speech this year. And I'm going, that has to be a dismissal of me. And I don't know if this other person has a publicist, but isn't that the way? Like, the narrative has to be dismissive of what might be competition. Now, what's funny is that I would think I had established myself as the standard bearer this year. Once again, for one thing that I do, but it's like, I know that I'm going to have to claw and fight to get my stand-up recognized and get respect for that. And I'm prepared for that fight. Metaphorical fight, not literal, but unless you steal jokes from me, and then there will be a literal fight. But this narrative of like now I had gone from, oh, Sarah Cooper overshadowed me, to like now if a publicist or something can get word out to film critics. By the way, A.O. Scott, not a comedy critic. Don't know if he's a comedy fan. I mean, stand-up comedy. But so now I'm not even the reference point for a Trump impersonator. Like, what a year. What, like, that's my 2020 was like, I had like three good weeks, and then I was overshadowed by a lip sync, and then overshadowed, and the New Yorker magazine did the exact same thing a day later. So that's what makes me think it's a publicist at work. The New Yorker did an article a day or two later about Sarah Cooper and this other guy. And I'm just sitting there going, I mean, I've been written up in a bunch of things, but never, like, but no public, like, in other words, the only people who have written email, and it's Washington Post, LA Times, like NewJersey.com, like different big sites and publications have written me up based solely on them just discovering me. But when you start to see even bigger publications, like, you know, almost a coordinated effort, you just sort of go, oh, wow, is this a publicist steering this narrative? So it's like, it's a weird thing for my year to begin with a high point and then be overshadowed by somebody who's not doing an impersonation, and then to be shoved into a closet or a desk drawer for some other person who, you know, one of the articles about this guy in Vanity Fair was like, he doesn't believe in writing out Trump impersonations. I'm like, I know, neither do I. I just got my YouTube stats. I have put out, not counting my podcast, by the way, which is in 45 minutes every week as Trump, I put out 12 hours of Trump content this year. And that's really only from March to now. 12 hours of Trump content. You know how much of that was scripted? Zero. Zero. One guy does two or three Instagram videos in 4 months and they're hailing him as this improv genius. And I'm going, it doesn't matter. It's not about him, but I'm going, what is the as I talked about existential threats to comedy. One is the population finding limited lip sync to be the new George Carlin, Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock. Like, that's fucking so disturbing to me on a gut level. But then to find out that even though you are your own best publicist, where your own Twitter account and your own content is the only thing that's gotten you press and you've gotten a lot of press, but you still can't overcome the power of representatives and publicists, no matter how many people see your work, and it's always people who aren't deep in the comedy game. That's also what's so frustrating, is like the New Yorker, like what? But and A.O. Scott, a film critic, but that's still such a huge platform to get. And I'm just sitting here going, so it didn't matter how good I got or what I put out or the volume or the originality or the improv. It was like, you're still not going to even pull even with talent agents and publicists. It's fucking disturbing. So, you know, I stood in my supermarket reading the A.O. Scott quote. Like, I went from the post office to the supermarket. And I must have looked like Michael Douglas in Falling Down. I was just staring at my phone, just standing in the middle of a supermarket. I could have looked like somebody who was about to plan an attack, because it was just so weird that here's this giant dude not shopping, not doing anything, just reading his phone, not shuffling along reading his phone, but like standing as if he just got the worst news in the world. And I mean, you know, I didn't do anything publicly, but I expressed real contempt to some loved ones. and it wasn't a good end of the week last week. It was very frustrating and very, and it shouldn't get me this bummed, but it just feels like there's always that, you know, I'm very, I'm immune to the Sarah Cooper stuff now, but when you start seeing other people getting gassed up, and then it's just like, what is going on? I keep thinking to myself, I'm like, I know I have a great ear for impressions, and I'm going, this guy's fine, but I don't get it. Like, and you start to feel like a little crazy. I don't know. Anyway, tune in next week for, you know, my murder trial or something. Kidding. But let's talk more fun stuff, shall we? But yeah, just super fun. And I thought last week's episode, I didn't get a lot of comments on last week's episode. The Rod on the Black Eyed Tips highlighted on his show, so I appreciate that. But it was... I really did think last week's was one of the best episodes I've ever done. So hopefully you enjoyed it. The numbers were pretty good on downloads and listens. So thank you for listening. But maybe it was too uncomfortable or too honest or too like not for public consumption. Just weird. I always get more comments for episodes. So maybe just talking about porn for a half hour in a, you know, honest way, not in a salacious way. Maybe that was too awkward. But thank you for everybody who did listen. Okay. So... And that's one thing I'm filming a couple of sketches later this week. But one thing I'm going to be doing is putting together a like mega mix, like a 2-minute mega mix of like every impression I've done this year, just so people are like, you know, who've only seen 4 videos will realize, oh, he did like 19 impressions this year. That's crazy. Like people are still, it's the algorithm is a bitch because people are like, still discovering me and still discovering, like, they're like, this Brett Kavanaugh impression is amazing. That's from like a video in August or something. You know, and I'm just like, what the fuck? Well, I'm glad you like it now, but it's just always weird where people are like, you know, like I've said before, oh, wow, you did, wow, another video from you, finally. And it's like, I haven't seen you since Easter. And I'm like, holy shit, have you missed literally 12 hours of content that I've been posting, you know, 3 to 5 times a week. Okay, more fun topics, and then we'll get out of here. Had to vent. You know me. This is my venting space. But it's, I don't know, folks. It's just, I have a new sympathy for people who I guess are in the spotlight or get seen. But, you know, I don't know. It's very frustrating. But let's talk about snacks. I talked about healthy eating. I found a new enemy on my war to lose weight. And it's the, I forget which one. I think we have a Dollar Tree or a Dollar General. One of those two that's near my apartment. And it opened like a few months ago, It opened up like, you know, right before the pandemic. And, you know, when any store opens up, it's like, this is actually really nice. And like within 3 weeks, like nobody's putting anything away and it's just a fucking mess. And there was a great article in The New Yorker that I think they had worked on with ProPublica. I have to say that because my brother works for ProPublica, but I didn't realize it was a joint project. But I read it in The New Yorker about like dollar stores, and Google that shit, because holy shit, it's fucked up, like in terms of their pay and security and how they're always in high crime areas. Not mine, but you know, still. You should check that out. I recommend also, there's another reading assignment for you to Google the New Yorker dollar store article. From probably four months ago. I don't know what the fuck happened to time this year. It's gone so slowly and so quickly at the same time. What a bizarre year, to say the least. But dollar store snacks. Now, here's the thing. I never thought for many months to go. The dollar store would be where I'd be like, I want to get some index cards. I need some pens close by. Fine. It's low quality, but it's like 10 pens for a dollar. Insane. If three of them work, it's a great value. But I never even bothered to look at the dollar store snacks because, you know, I assumed it would be like instead of Wheat Thins, it would be like crispy wheat crackers and like, you know, shit like that where you're just like, I'm not getting your like Z-level snacks. Until I just strolled through the snack lane at my Dollar General or Dollar whatever the fuck it is, whichever fucking one it is. And they got the premium snacks. They got pita chips. They got Snickers. They got M&Ms. They got all of it. All the snacks. Goobers. They got the movie snack size goober packs for a dollar. That shit's like $4.25 at an AMC. So I was like, get out of here. So now I've discovered that I can get movie snacks and chips, like store brand shit, for a dollar each. And I'm just like, this is bad news. So I'll keep you posted on this, but, you know, this is not good news for my health because now it's closer than the supermarket. It's closer than the CVS. It's a lot closer than the bakery. I have to earn the bakery cookies cause it's like a 1.1 mile walk. So I'm doing about 2.25 miles just to get some cookies from the bakery. But now with the dollar store, I'm just like, oh, I can get like a nice little bag of pita chips and, you know, a box of Goobers and throw in some snack size Chips Ahoy. And that's just going to cost me $3. That's not good. So I'll try to stay vigilant, folks. But, you know, the dollar store is, you know, it's the enemy we never saw coming. It's been right there the whole time, just waiting for its time. And then we get bad weather and you go, I need to get some index cards. And all of a sudden, you just find yourself wandering down the snack aisle thinking it's just going to be some bullshit chocolate covered candy shit. And instead you're like, M&Ms spelled the right way. Uh-oh. So there's that. I was thinking, I tweeted today that our snow day's dead. What do you think, folks, with remote learning and remote work? Is it like we got a blizzard coming to Jersey? And I'm like, yeah, in my head at first, I was like, yes, no work, no school. And I was like, no, tons of work. And I have 2 Zoom shows on Wednesday, and those will continue. You know, because you can't be like, oh man, my internet, the blizzard knocked out my internet. Well, then what? You're not doing anything else. You can't use that excuse. Because it's like, if you're hoping, if it's real, if you're like, my internet crashed because of the blizzard, if it really does crash, well, then no Netflix, no TV. You're just going to be reading by candlelight for the day, which would still be nice, nicer than work. But you get my point. You either have to lie to your boss and just watch Netflix all day while going, still out, still no internet, can't hear you. Or you can be an honest person and be like, I guess I'm just going to work while the world gets buried in snow. Guys, watched three things on HBO Max in the last week. I'm trying to finally get through some of this content. There is too much content. It should be a Bee Gees song. No matter, it's too much content no more. And I'm doing that because I also watched the Bee Gees documentary, but I watched that on HBO when it was on. I felt like the Bee Gees deserved me watching the premiere as it premiered. Love the Bee Gees, love Barry Gibb. Good doc. Part of me is always like, I think we're at this point now with documentaries where I'm like, oh, it was a really good documentary. Oh, it was a great doc. I don't know if it was. Usually it's just like there's three types of doc. There's four documentaries, folks, four types of documentaries. There's a piece of shit documentary that sucks. There's a not good documentary, but I like the subject matter, so I'll watch it and probably enjoy it. There's the good documentary of a subject matter I didn't think I'd like. Then I'm like, ooh, that was actually pretty interesting. And then there's the great documentary about topics I like. Like Hoop Dreams would be an example of great documentary about a topic I like. But it becomes very hard, I think, to distinguish. Like, is this a good documentary? Or do I just really like hearing the Bee Gees music and, like, you know, casting the Bee Gees? Righteous Girlfriend said that that Robin Gibb, who for most of the time, who was always the ugliest of the Gibb brothers, but at least as an older man, it was a little less awkward. But man, she was just like, he looks like a Martin Short character. And I was like, that's not bad. And I kept saying, you know, Barry Gibb, I always thought Barry or Andy Gibb, I always thought was going to be played by Heath Ledger, or you could have like Heath Ledger and James Franco play the two of them. And I'm not sure about the other guy, Maurice. Maurice, I always thought looked like the transition between ugly BG Robin and handsome BG Barry. He looked literally like he was midway from going to handsome and then they just stopped. As I said on a previous iteration of the Righteous Prick podcast many years ago before I deleted all the files, I always said I feel like groupies would just, they would blow the ugly Bee Gees just to get to Barry. Like that was the main source of groupie love for Maurice and Robin. Rest in peace, guys. Was like, oh, is Barry in there? Okay. Is Andy in there? Okay. Well, like, we'll give you hand jobs if you let us in to see the good looking Bee Gees. But yeah, I don't know. I think it was a good documentary. I enjoyed it. It was informative. It was comprehensive. It was touching and you heard all the good music. But at the same time in my head, I'm like, I think it's a good documentary, but I think if it was a bad documentary, but they played all the Bee Gees music, I'd still be like, loved it. So it becomes very tough. And I think we have too many documentaries. I think it's become this very sort of easy format for people to do, but like there's too many. A perfect example, I watched two on HBO Max. Baby God, because I needed to cheer up. So it was about a doctor who was like a pedophile and also inseminated dozens, if not hundreds, of women at his fertility clinic with his own sperm. And watching the movie, I was just like, wow, this seems like something very interesting and tragic for a documentary. And then by the end of it, I was just like, oh, you didn't like, I don't really feel like I got any answers. Like you just kind of let me know. Like I would rather some documentaries. I'm just like, yeah, I'd rather just read like a 2000 word article on this and like be done with it. Then I don't know that you gave me enough to, you know, it wasn't bad, but I was just like, I guess like that was, you know, I don't feel like I got any answers. I feel like you just kind of told me about this and that's it. And I could have done that in reading like a, you know, 15-minute article instead of a 80-minute documentary. And then the other thing that annoyed me was I was much more interested. I watched that like because I, you know, that was like to fill in some time. It was like before the Bee Gees thing. Well, we watched Baby God, Heaven's Gate, which is also on HBO Max. That I was much more interested in. And I feel like, you know, what we don't realize is, I don't mean this from a toxic masculine kind of way, but I do think that that's always a good way to start a sentence. I do think that in a funny way, there has been a sort of pop feminization of the culture. And what I mean by that is true crime used to be like the domain of like bored women at home, if you're thinking stereotypically. But now true crime seems to be like, and cult stuff seems to be like Righteous Girlfriend was always into like some true crime shit and like cults. But now I feel like those are becoming mainstream, like they've crossed over from just like bored housewife material to like everybody should watch this stuff. And I was watching Heaven's Gate. So I was like, I'm interested in this because I just remember hearing about it. It happened when I was like a high school senior. So I was like familiar with it. I even recognized like the leader's sort of goofy home videos. But I just knew like, oh yeah, that was like a cult that they killed themselves, right? And that was it. And there was like some spaceship or some space aliens thing. Well, I watched it. It was four parts on HBO Max. And by the end of it, I was just like, okay, so you told me the story and you keep talking about like people should be concerned. One of the themes of it was like people should know these weren't just crazy people. These were like educated people, but who had like something missing in their lives. And that's where it was able to tap in. But I felt like at the end of it, it was just like, okay, but I didn't get any answer. Like I didn't get to know why did this dude start this cult? Like, was it the fact that he was gay and like trying to like hide that or like fight that and it manifested itself in this? Why did all these people join? Why did it, like, you're just kind of warning me and saying, you know, smart people can join cults too. You got to be careful. But I don't, like, at the end of it, I was like, that was like four hours of my week that I just was like, I don't know. I like know more about it, but documentaries, I feel like they used to be like a perspective or there'd be a story and a, not a lesson, but sort of something to take away from a documentary besides facts. You know what I mean? Like if you want fact, like True Hollywood Stories or Behind the Music, those would be like fun fact hour documentaries on cable years ago where you just be like, oh, cool. I learned a little bit more about my band. But these other documentaries, it's like, you should watch it. Like I feel, I'm not the first to say this. I don't know if Rod said it on the Black Eyed Tips, but I'm definitely not the first to say this, but it's like, documentaries feel like they've replaced books for people. Like they're like the Cliff's Notes of how I can seem informed and intelligent. Oh, I watched this great document. And I feel like we're starting to throw great documentary around too much. Like Hoop Dreams, great documentary. Searching for Sugar Man, to me, great documentary. Like, and there's I'm sure many more that I'm not thinking of. But there, a lot more documentaries are like, oh, that was fun. I don't know if it's great. I don't know if it's like serving the purpose. It's like a fun movie. I don't know if it's a great documentary. Because to me, documentaries feel like things that we should be like informing us, but also revealing something, not just giving us information. I felt like Heaven's Gate was like mostly information with this promise of like, we're going to reveal a deeper truth about this and like why they did this. And I was like, at the end of it, I was like, okay, so it just made me a little sad. It's a little creepy. And that's it. Like they're dead. Like they killed themselves. They thought this was happening. But I would have, you know, I felt like they never really got to the nitty gritty of what I wanted to hear or what I was hoping to hear. So I just feel like documentaries now have just become this shortcut to like seem like you've really dug into some shit, but yet you haven't. You know, books can take weeks or months sometimes, especially for me now where I'm barely reading, but a documentary can be like, you know, even to me, I don't even know why it took me so long. Ken Burns, folks, now he's to the extreme as a documentarian. Oh, I got an eyelash in my eye. I'm trying to get this out without the help of a mirror. Nope. Just going to be fucking with my eye for the next 15 minutes. But I mean, there you're talking about a guy who's tells stories and reveals things about American life and American culture and does it with such gifted storytelling ability. But now it just feels like a documentary is like, well, I want to make a movie. I want to get funding. I want to get, like, how do I do this quickly, easily? What's the easiest way to make a movie? And it's like, well, to make a documentary. And it just feels like there's so many goddamn documentaries now. And I'm even at a point where I'm like, I don't know if this was a good documentary. I can tell you if I enjoyed a documentary. But now it just feels like if I like the subject, I guess that makes it an awesome doc. But I don't really think, like, most of these I just go, I enjoyed that. That was good. That was enjoyable. It's what I wanted to hear. But, yeah, so for the Bee Gees, I think it was good. But I'm just trying to look at these things objectively and go, like, if this had been about a band that I don't fucking give a shit about and never liked their music, would I still think it was a great documentary? I don't know. Maybe. Whereas Ken Burns' country music, I'm like, not a huge fan of the genre, but boy, oh boy, did I enjoy watching country music and learning history and having a narrative of American storytelling through music told. So that's the difference, I guess. But too many documentaries, folks. It's just too fucking many. Like, they are like the tip of the content spear. We have too much fucking content. And a small but significant portion of that is too many damn documentaries. Make a real movie. It's harder, but yeah, do that. TikTok. I've mentioned TikTok and docs so much. TikTok, should TikTok be the name? Because I mentioned the Baby God documentary. I've mentioned TikTok. I've mentioned docs. TikTok might be a good title for the episode. I probably won't go with that, but still, it's punny. And then I watched The Undoing, which both me and the Righteous GF wanted to watch. Hugh Grant and Nicole Kidman. Real, you know, whodunit, true crime drama. And boy, oh boy. Love the Latin Jennifer Lawrence looking chick that they had in this movie. Spoiler, she gets murdered, but boy, oh boy, do we get to see plenty of her until she does. A brave performance. That's the way you talk about a woman's nudity. If you want to seem not creepy about talking about a movie, you go, she was very brave and revealing. It was a very courageous performance. That just means she had them great tits and ass and she was showing them off. But it was courageous and brave and very vulnerable. She was very vulnerable in the film. And I think a star was born because I really got to see who she was and, you know, how far she was willing to go as a character actress. But The Undoing, I didn't read anything about it. We did a good job of staying spoiler free. We watched it over the last 3 days, like two episodes Friday, two episodes Saturday, two episodes Sunday. A tasteful binge. That's what I call that. When you just sort of go, we'll clean this series out, but we'll do it tastefully. What a disappointment. And every critic seemed to agree with this when I read it, is that much like I've complained about the show Lost, which is a hugely influential show, but also a show that, you know, basically Lost, what they did to you with Lost was say, we're going to double down. More questions, more hints, more questions, more twists. And you're going, my God, this show is amazing. They're giving me so many twists and so many great questions. And when they resolve it, but it's all about the payoff. In other words, I've read Stephen King books like this, Under the Dome, loved it for 800 pages, fucking hated the ending. And I felt like, my God, it is the toughest but most rewarding thing to do in fiction, I think, whether it be film or TV or books, is to give twists and build up for a payoff and then have the payoff pay off. What some things do, and Under the Dome, I felt was like, I loved that book until the ending. And I was like, what a cop spoiler for Under the Dome. It's aliens? Fuck off. Fuck you, Stephen King. I've read a lot of his books. I'm just saying that was my feeling at the time because I was like, for 800 pages, it's been this awesome book where you're like, what is this? Is it a government experiment? Is it this? And then it was just aliens or what? I don't even remember. I think it was aliens. I just remember being like so mad at the ending because it was such a like, well, if it's aliens, that's easy. That's an easy ending to all these questions. And spoiler for The Undoing. If you haven't watched it, spoiler, skip 1 minute from here. He did it. He did it. He did it. I want to turn into Dave Chappelle. He did the crime. He did that crime. He bashed that beautiful, sexy woman's face in, and nobody's talking about it. That's what, like, the whole movie, the whole series is about, like, but who did it? If not him, who? And then it's like, no, it was him. And I'm like, well, that's a waste of my time. That's not, that didn't take writing skill. That didn't take show writing skill to be like, look at all these twists. And in the end, you know who did it? The guy we all thought did it. Like, it was so annoying because it was like enjoyable for 5 episodes, but it was enjoyable with the anticipation of a payoff, and there was no payoff. And I hate that. I do. I hate when you benefit from pretending like there's a payoff, but there's no payoff. Like with Lost, it was just like, wow, this show, what narrative, what unique storytelling. Oh, they're dead, and we're not going to answer 7 of the 15 questions or things. Okay, cool. That you lose some of that credit that you built up. It's like boosting your stock value, and then you found out there's been tricky accounting practices. That's what it feels like. I'm going to call that Enron. We're calling that Enron storytelling, okay? Enron storytelling. This is going off the rails. But the point is, I watched those things, was mostly disappointed by it all, but I'm still holding out hope for HBO Max because, you know, who knows? Maybe they'll buy my special and sketch film series, which neither of which has been made yet, but will be made in 2021. So got to keep nice with all the platforms, but I respect HBO Max. They're HBO. HBO Max is the younger brother of the GOAT in TV content, HBO. You can talk about Netflix all you want. HBO is the GOAT. So HBO Max is the younger brother of HBO, and I'm going to give it the respect that big brother earned. And I'm going to give it a chance to thrive and succeed. I thought, you know, Undoing was an HBO show as well. But so far, HBO Max, I don't know. Raised by Wolves is the next thing I'm going to watch on HBO Max because that was like a pure HBO Max sci-fi series, and I'm curious. I don't know if anybody's seen it, but I'm going to watch that, and I hope it's good. And if it's not, it's not, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. Bah, 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 bah. Trump, please. Buck, 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 buck. So I guess that's it, guys. I've been angry enough. I thought my healthy snack would have invigorated me, but you got some more harsh truth. You got some strong truth from your 9th favorite comedian, J.L. Covan. So yeah, that's it, guys. I have nothing else to rant about, nothing else to bitch about. But yeah, you know, the John the Baptist of comedy. That's all. That's not too lofty a title for me. But hopefully you enjoyed this. Hopefully you found it informative. Or you just said, my God, this man can really, really ruin comedy, can't he? It's a gift. It's a bizarre gift he has. But hopefully you enjoyed this. And if you didn't, so be it. Not every episode's for everybody. That's it, guys. Have a great week. The Electoral College and all that shit. And check out Making Podcasts Great Again, obviously. Subscribe to my YouTube channels if you haven't already. Totally free content. See, no sales pitch at the end of the episode. Just make sure you're at least supporting the free content. Review 5-star this on Apple Podcasts. 5-star Making Podcasts Great Again on Apple Podcasts. And subscribe to my YouTube channel. Some more videos going up. I will be at the request of Chris Lamberth, who, by the way, is in episode 3 of The Undoing. I liked it. He was a black bailiff working for a black court officer working for a black judge. How about that? But yeah, my friend Chris Lamberth was on the show. Me and the Righteous Girlfriend are always very excited when we see Chris appear on shows. And yeah, episode 3, by the way, Chris was right there in the positive episodes. Like I said, only episode 6 ruined the series for me. But Chris was in episode 3, which was right dab in the middle of the high quality expectation building episodes of The Undoing. But per Chris's desire recommendation, I will be doing one more Trump video game play, The Last of Us 2, which I own but have not played yet. One game of the year. Last of Us Part 1 is on my Mount Rushmore of video games ever. If I was to come up with my Mount Rushmore of video games ever, I think personally, I know, yes, well, about Super Mario Bros., that's got to be, fuck off. Super Tecmo Bowl on Nintendo, the most advanced system for system, pound for pound, the most advanced game ever. It was like the first game that would store, it had like a chip in it where you could store stats in a season. I mean, ahead of its time. It is for me, the greatest sports game ever. I know some people will be like, what about NHL 94? No, I spoke, okay? Nintendo 8-bit Super Tecmo Bowl, the greatest sports game, pound for pound, bit for bit of all time. Last of Us Part 1 on my Mount Rushmore, without question. I would say I would then have to throw in Red Dead Redemption, also on PlayStation 3. Those are two PlayStation 3 titles. And honestly, a weird choice. I'm trying to think of like either Nintendo games I loved or PlayStation 1 games. This is just for me. I think I got more enjoyment out of Madden 97, because you got to realize Madden 97, you're talking senior year of high school into freshman year of college. So that was like the peak of my sort of playing games with friends days, not just a solitary activity. And I feel like Madden 97 will always be in my head as like the game I played with friends the most. So we got two sports games, a PlayStation 1 sports game, a Nintendo 8-bit game. And I know other people will be like, what about GoldenEye? Well, I didn't have a Nintendo 64. I'm telling you my personal Mount Rushmore. So I'm obviously excited to play Last of Us 2. But the point is, Chris thought that it would make for a good Trump video game video. So that's what I am doing this week. I will put up, by Monday of next week, I will put up Trump playing The Last of Us 2. And since it's just one game of the year, maybe that'll get a little extra traction. But yeah, that's it, guys. That's it. We live in a world where creating original comedy content is becoming a niche form of comedy, and copying and begging for likes and social media clout is more important than the content you make. So it seems like a great time to be a comedian and a great time to be an American. So I'll just be here drowning my sorrows in green tea and hopefully not eating too much from the dollar store. So have a great week, guys. Stay safe, stay healthy. Happy Hanukkah if you celebrate Hanukkah. And that sounded anti-Semitic, didn't it? I'm just making a joke. Some of my worst girlfriends have been Jewish, okay? So I'm allowed to say that. No, happy Hanukkah if you celebrate it. Let's be honest, though, it's a third-tier Jewish holiday that's just competing for the marketing space of Christmas. The big dogs and Jews, you should have separated your holidays better. That's all I'm saying. You really packed in the big dogs into one week in the fall. You should have just slid, you know, do Yom Kippur in the fall, Day of Atonement. But Rosh Hashanah, throw that one into December, because that's a big dog. That's one of your big, that's your Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, your Christmas and Easter. Hanukkah is more like your, I don't know. What's an obscure, barely day of obligation in the church? You know, that's your, they're all big. The church really makes a big deal of the holy days of obligation. It's your feast of the Holy Family. You know, it's just another Sunday, but you get a special name. It's not a day of ordinary time. But if you do celebrate Hanukkah, now that I've degraded your holiday of candles, happy Hanukkah. If you celebrate Kwanzaa, happy Kwanzaa, but I'll have another episode before Kwanzaa. So, I'll probably call it, I think I'm going to pretend like I'll do a Trump video for Kwanzaa where he misses up Kwame and Kwanzaa. So he'll be talking about, remember when Michael Jordan called Kwanzaa Brown the F word? That's for my 9 sports fans who listen. So thank you guys. Happy holidays. Stay safe, stay healthy, get a vaccine. If you're somebody who can get a vaccine right now, get one. And if you're MAGA and you somehow listen to this podcast, breathe on all your relatives. who like MAGA too, but don't breathe on any of your non-MAGA relatives. So anyway, rambling. Have a great week. Stay safe, stay healthy, and I will see you next Tuesday.